This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com. The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, Micah Hanks, who has been on the PowerCast for a few years, has been regaling us with his British accent that I shall not share with you. It's actually quite good. I don't do accents myself on James Bond because you see how bad that is. But I was thinking here about the accents and the fact that actors from the UK and Australia constantly play Americans. Think about that. How many people, like in the just concluded reboot of Hawaii 5-0, the lead actor was Australian. The last Batman before Ben Affleck took it over. Christian Bale is Welshman. Commissioner Gordon being, of course, British also. Sounding like Americans.
I guess if you want to work in this industry, they are going to dictate how you're supposed to speak. Now, the one exception had been when Scottish actor Peter Capaldi takes the role of Doctor Who, and even in instances where other Scottish actors have played that role, like David Tennant before him, they had to kind of adopt for a more Anglo-centric and English audience. But they didn't do that to Peter Capaldi.
You don't do anything to Peter Capaldi.
So I hear.
All right. Jodie Whittaker has to adapt that accent, too. Because hers is, what, north of England or something like that. I forget. She does, by the way, a killer rendition of the Coldplay song Yellow. You might have heard. This is available on YouTube, by the way. It's a charitable recording from the BBC. And the backup band is Coldplay. I mean, she backpacked around the world, and she'd bring music, and some of her favorite artists included Coldplay, so it was really interesting. Why are we talking about Doctor Who? I have no idea. But I do think there are lots of things to catch up on, Micah Hanks. I was making a list as we were talking, and the first thing that came up, and it's really not in his recent episodes of the Grailian Report, and that is the MUFON Follies. I don't know how you could even take MUFON seriously anymore. I mean, over the years, to me, it was just a way for people to get out the word about whether UFOs are ET. Okay, that's fine. They collect sightings. The people who work for them are serious. And then we have a couple of their state directors putting out racist screeds over on Facebook. Now we had recently Jan Harzan, their former executive director, meaning he was a paid executive, being arrested for being a pedophile. And then we have him replaced by the former director, the international director, David McDonald, who used to sponsor mile-high sex parties aboard airplanes. Micah, what is going on here?
Well, you know, full disclosure, I've never been a member of the Mutual UFO Network. One of the saddest things to me about this, and really a lot of the controversies that have kind of haunted and daunted that organization in recent years, is the fact that so much of this ends up overshadowing some of the good work that MUFON has done. And yes, there have been a lot of reports and studies that MUFON has contributed to over the years that have been very useful, but very beneficial in expanding our knowledge about the UFO issue. But, you know, when you have these kinds of, again, not only unfortunate, but I think I could come up with much stronger language to use for it. But I mean, these really just terrible developments churning up. I mean, it really unfortunately seems to be taking public perception of not just the MUFON organization, but to an extent, elements of, I think, you know, the UFO culture, you might say. It unfortunately kind of casts all that in a bad light. It's unfortunate. But I think that the most unfortunate part is for especially people like myself who are interested in trying to understand the phenomenon, trying to understand it, apply history and science to it, and, you know, in the furtherance of trying to develop ways that it can be studied and analyzed intelligently, a lot of the good work that MUFON has done over the years is unfortunately overshadowed by this. Now, I don't think that we should forget about that good work, but quite obviously there are going to be some shifts and changes that are going to be necessary. I'm sure this is already underway, but I mean, there's going to have to be a much more proactive effort on the part of MUFON leadership, especially going forward.
I think they have to replace their international director. Nobody should be tainted with anything. Not that other organizations don't have people with legal problems or with extreme political viewpoints. Of course they do. This is Earth, and we expect that. But when you're being watched and you're pretending or presenting yourself to be a serious scientific organization, and you have an atmosphere where people regard those who follow UFOs or UAPs as those wearing tinfoil hats, you have to be politically correct. I think Major Kehoe back in the 50s and 60s with NICAP understood that. Sometimes he went overboard trying to look respectable. I mean, he added military people on there and therefore was criticized as running a CIA cover-up because one of the people he had was his former Annapolis classmate, the first head of the CIA. But forgetting that, he understood the politics. MUFON doesn't get the politics. And so anything that happens is not just going to be frowned on. It's going to make us all look worse because we're tainted.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, I've spent a lot of time recently looking back at some of the press conferences, you know, back in the day when NICAP was the preeminent, maybe really, no, there were others. There was APRO, of course, but, you know, NICAP really had kind of risen to a position of prominence as far as investigative civilian committees that were looking at the UFO issue. And you remember the famous press conference where there's Kehoe and Dr. McDonald is there and, you know, many others are sitting there at the press club and they're addressing the media about all of this. And the way that they tried to carry themselves, you're right, again, there was a very much a different air. Some might argue it wasn't per se sophisticated. They definitely tried to have that sort of appearance. You know, Kehoe, if you listen to recordings of him and you compare his pattern of speech to his writing style, some might say that his writing style was a little over the top, and when he spoke, maybe it was a little less so. It was actually, if anything, quite the opposite. He had kind of a calming, sort of almost charming, but sort of lazy speech pattern. And so there was this interesting blend of things going on there with NICAP, but you never saw them haunted by controversies. You know, coming back to MUFON for a moment, Gene.
Just want to throw this out before you go back to MUFON about Kehoe.
Yeah.
I met Kehoe. I heard Kehoe on the radio. And I agree, it was kind of a calming influence, but it had that, I would say, the atmosphere of hearing from a guy who was a soldier.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely demeanor of a soldier, but he was also a pulp mystery writer. And when he wrote his UFO books, he wrote it in the same vein. This is a mystery story. He had the recreated dialogue. Minimal descriptions, more dialogue than description. It was a classic mystery story, and that was good or bad. It made it very readable. In fact, if you remember Captain Ruppelt's book, The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects, was written in very much similar style, which tells me that Kehoe had a lot to do with helping with the editing.
Yeah, that's important. And by the way, on a side note, I've got to add, since you're implying, of course, Kehoe's involvement with Ruppelt's book, because I've often thought about that. I've often thought, wow, Ruppelt did a really good job with this book. He must have had a really good editor and or maybe a ghostwriter. But there was a funny photograph from one of John Keel's newsletters that I found recently over there at johnkeel.com that Doug Skinner runs. And the photo had been captioned. It was Keel standing there with Jacques Vallée. And I don't know if you've seen this photograph, Gene, but the caption reads, it was Jacques Vallée and one of his ghostwriters. Yeah. So that was a little of the Keelian humor.
Let's do our break and we'll come back to it. Micah Hanks of the Graylian Report. And we're going to talk about a few of the things he's brought up. In fact, that he dropped John Keel in there, we're going to go into that next. We've got more to come with Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Attention radio listeners, have you ever wanted to be independent of the utility companies and actually generate your own supply of off-grid electrical power? If so, this is going to be the most important message you'll ever hear. Here's why. A limited number of solar-powered backup generators are back in stock and now available. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. It's like having an electric power plant running silently, secretly, in your own home. Run sump pumps, shortwave radios, computers, even keep food from spoiling. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more. That's MySolarBackup.com. Supplies are still limited and are available on a first-come, first-served basis only. MySolarBackup.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
You see, Randall was only here by echo.
Oh, hello, hello. No, it was dialing in via satellite, I understand. By the way, hello, Randall. I hadn't officially yet said hello to you. It's good to be on the mic with you, brother.
Yeah, I'm feeling like an echo of my former self.
Yeah, no, it's really great to have you back, Micah, for sure. So I'm going to just let you and Gene talk a little bit here while I figure out something useful to say. And, yeah, just been looking forward to the show all week. So you guys just go for it.
Perfect.
Well, first, John Keel, let's talk about him briefly, because you mentioned it. You threw it out there that John Keel. John Keel had, if you have a private email or publish any of it, as I have done, really a really, really wacky sense of humor. We don't see it so much in his books, but it was there. And it was fascinating to behold that. And there's a show you did just a couple of weeks back called John Keel and the Men in Black. And when you think of the Men in Black, and I want to ask you more about Keel connection, we go back to Gray Barker, because Gray Barker wrote They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers. And that told the story of Albert K. Bender and other instances where people allegedly were silenced by the Men in Black. And the reason I mention it is because our staff announcer, Bob Zanotti, and I have been talking about bringing back more voices of the past from his radio show of the 60s. He was at a college radio station and did a show called Coffee Clutch, which was one of the early paranormal radio shows. It was heard in and around the New York area. Now, he has a lot of the original recordings that he's transferred to digital, and some of them feature Gray Barker. Of course, Gray Barker telling a lot of the fascinating stories that he became famous for, and we're going to play some of those on the PowerCast, maybe offer full episodes for those who subscribe to the PowerCast Plus. That's coming. So that'll be fascinating to look forward to. I mean, how many people nowadays even know what Gray Barker sounded like? They probably know what John Keel sounded like, or maybe not. In any case, tell us about John Keel.
Yeah, John was really kind of a trailblazer, an interesting guy, a mixed bag, and I think at times often misunderstood. I always just liked when you mention his speech pattern, in addition to his sense of humor. And again, for people like me, especially if you look at the eloquence of Jacques Vallée and his writing, and actually, you know, again, a second language English speaker, being from France, nonetheless with a mastery of English and able to write the way that he does, that Keel would refer to himself jokingly as a ghostwriter for Vallée. It bespoke a couple of things there, both Keel's sense of humor, but also sort of the strange relationship that he and Vallée had, because, you know, many will point out they didn't always get along, but if you notice in Keel's writings and in Vallée's, they both reference one another in a fairly sterile way, but nonetheless in a way that you can tell that they did have some mutual appreciation. You know, as far as John Keel goes and who he was, I think it's pretty evident why that became the case, because after traveling throughout the Orient and then coming back home in his 20s, I believe, he wrote the book Jadu, which is a fantastic book, and I highly recommend that people actually read that. I think you can still get it from Anomalous Books. Patrick Weege makes that available. But, you know, his better-known books are The Mothman Prophecies, of course. But then there was a book after that. There were actually other books, too. But, I mean, after that, he wrote in the same year a book titled The Eighth Tower. And in The Eighth Tower, Keel kind of moves away from a, not that he was ever necessarily really a nuts-and-bolts UFO guy, but he really moves away from that and starts adopting what most would call a more occult approach. Some have even referred to it as a demonological kind of approach toward UFOs. Now, I don't think that's inaccurate, especially if you read The Eighth Tower. He absolutely seems to kind of take a almost parapsychological approach to studying UFOs. It's also fair to say that Keel had been working on sort of a UFO encyclopedia, and he had a number of little cards that he was keeping, like in a Rolodex, with entries that would be in this encyclopedia. He never ended up publishing this, but these were still in his files, and when he passed away and Doug Skinner obtained these files, and occasionally he posts these on the website johnkeel.com, which is fantastic, comes highly recommended. It's a blog just devoted to Keel's old letters, documents, and correspondences. Occasionally, Doug has dipped into the entries for the encyclopedia, and in one of those, we see Keel's definition for what he called an ultra-terrestrial. Now, a lot of folks have pointed out the fact that this was a kind of term that Keel used. He actually borrowed that term, I think, from Mead Lane, if memory serves, but he applied that to the UFO phenomenon, and most people took that to mean something along the lines of interdimensional, right? But Keel's definition of what a a so-called ultra-terrestrial was supposed to be was something a little different. He describes an ultra-terrestrial as, quote, related to this Earth, but set apart from it by unusual physical characteristics, neither superior or inferior to the human race, but different. Again, that doesn't really sound like ghosts, goblins, you know, or something parapsychological. Keel's own definition of ultra-terrestrial almost seemed to be more like what the late Mac Tonys would have called a crypto-terrestrial. You know, Keel, right or wrong, again, looking at the so-called Men in Black phenomenon, I think his whole premise was that the UFO phenomena very well may emanate from Earth, and this quote-unquote ultra-terrestrial, not inferior or superior to, but just different from humans, exists right here along us. Maybe the Men in Black are part of that. I really think that that's essentially Keel's main thrust as far as the Men in Black and the broader UFO phenomena went, although he definitely did incorporate elements of what we would identify as occult or demonological interpretations into that sort of mythos that he built around. And you got to hand it to him. It was a very unique interpretation of ufology.
I remember when we first met John Keel. I think this may have been the time that he was assigned to do an article on UFOs for Playboy. Remember, Playboy then and now didn't just publish fancy pictures of women. It ran various serious articles. And they came over to Jim Moseley's offices at 303 Fifth Avenue in New York. And that's when we first heard of him. And then a few years later, suddenly we're reading Our Haunted Planet, and all the other books that he did, Operation Trojan Horse.
Yeah.
And, of course, Mothman Prophecies. But back then, it was just some writer. Interesting.
Yeah. But, you know, about that Playboy article, again, that was, you might say, sort of a game changer in terms of where Keel's interest in UFOs would go, because he had wanted to write what he considered at the time was going to be the definitive article on UFOs and appearing in all places in Playboy magazine. How about that?
Oh, yeah. I don't even remember what the article was about, or even if I even read the article.
I don't know if I've ever actually read it myself, to tell you the truth. I've seen a lot of references to it over the years, although I'm certain that it is available someplace online, as are a lot of those classic articles by Donald Kehoe. Again, if we're going to talk about articles that are particularly formative. Again, sadly, I don't know if Keel's article on UFOs, when I say it was going to be the definitive article on UFOs, that's what Keel was kind of aiming to do with it. But if you look at, for instance, I believe it was the Look magazine article written by Kehoe, right, about flying saucers, you know, this sort of a game changer in the history of, well, I should say, the public perception of the phenomenon.
We're going to look at some other game changers and be back with Micah Hanks and Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamil Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
A record-breaking heat wave is crippling most of the West. National Weather Service meteorologist Josh Weiss has details.
Maybe Wednesday the 19th, but really by Thursday and Friday of next week, some of that heat will start to abate pretty much everywhere but the far desert Southwest.
Rolling power outages were ordered Friday night in California. Cooling centers have been set up in many cities to help residents get out of the heat, but they're more restrictive due to the pandemic.
KNX reporter Margaret Carrero.
In light of the coronavirus pandemic, safety measures will be in place, such as extensive cleaning of the centers and physical distancing.
They're designated seats, so the seats are spaced apart with the social distancing practices.
Kevin McGowan, director of LA County's Office of Emergency Management, says face masks will be required and people will be asked to self-assess for symptoms.
This is USA Radio News. President Trump hasn't changed his mind about funding the Postal Service. USA Radio's Kenneth Burns has details.
President Trump is doubling down on his threat to withhold funding from the Postal Service. It comes as Thomas Marshall, General Counsel and Executive Vice President of the USPS, warned 40 states that state deadlines to request, return, and count ballots may clash with the realities of mail delivery. The president's threat is now tied with his coronavirus relief package.
Would you be willing to accept the $25 billion for the Postal Service, including the $3.5 billion to
give us what we want? And it's not what I want, it's what the American people want.
Former President Obama has accused his successor of trying to suppress the vote.
What we've never seen before is a president say, I'm going to try to actively kneecap the Postal Service to encourage voting, and I will be explicit about the reason I'm doing it.
For USA Radio News, I'm Kenneth Burns.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP, as slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Go to GCNteam.com or call 855-GCN-MALL. That's 855-426-6255. GCNteam.com or 855-426-6255. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
Hi, this is James Fox. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So from John Keel, we go into Game Changer articles. Micah Hanks, tell us more.
Donald Kehoe, early on, if we're talking about writers who have really had a tremendous influence on public perception of the phenomenon, I think that's one of Keel's contributions to the field. But again, he was not just a UFO researcher. He also kind of dabbled in Fortiana. One of his books we haven't mentioned was Strange Creatures from Time and Space. So, of course, he also sort of dabbled in cryptozoology and all these things, and really tried to sort of marry all these subjects together. And hence why I think that many people see him more as an occult writer. You couldn't say the same of Donald Kehoe. On the other hand, Donald Kehoe, former military man, science fiction writer, and a pretty good one, yes. But, I mean, he was a hardline UFO researcher. And it was Kehoe's early articles on UFOs that I think ended up being a tremendous influence on public perception of the phenomena. I may have said look earlier. I mean True Magazine. This is the famous January 1950 article that I'm talking about, although I think he probably also wrote for Look.
The one you're talking about also preceded his first book.
It did, yeah. This is one of the first lengthy articles that he published in which Kehoe kind of gives us the best evidence. I think he talks about the Mantell incident in this article, but he's also essentially trying to make the argument that, look, whatever this phenomenon is, I think it's extraterrestrial, and here's the evidence. So that's kind of the thrust of the article, and it had a tremendous effect. I think that not only did it really kind of steer the narrative in terms of that becoming the leading hypothesis, and would probably remain so all the way up at least until the University of Colorado project in the late 60s. But it also brought, I think, broader public attention to the UFO topic, more generally speaking. Up until that time, people knew about it. Some people were very anxious about it. There was, of course, concern that maybe there was a Russian phenomenon going on. We had some sort of experimental aircraft, maybe, hopefully, it's some of our own stuff. But then again, if that's the case, why is the Air Force investigating? Keeping in mind, of course, this is in the early days before Project Blue Book, but there were two existing studies prior to that as well, Sign and Grudge. But Now, with Kehoe writing this article for a popular publication, True Magazine was one of those that really had a fairly wide distribution. I think it actually grew in response to this article going to print. That's how big a splash this was, and it really was kind of a game changer in terms of public perception of the UFO phenomenon.
It's funny, when you look at the library of Donald Kehoe over at Amazon, you see his characters, Captain Philip Strange, Richard Knight. These were the pulp stories he wrote over the years, a whole bunch of them. He wrote more stories like that, I think, than he actually wrote books about UFOs. Although he did Aliens from Space, he did Flying Saucers from Outer Space, his original one, that I think right now is public domain. He did Flying Saucer Conspiracy and Flying Saucers Top Secret.
Yeah, a lot of books over the years. But again, looking at those similarities, as we're contrasting Keel and Kehoe, Keel also did a lot of writing, not only as far as writing everything from kind of trashy novels and sci-fi, but he also did some writing for television. He wrote under a pseudonym. One of them was Harry Gibbs, and then there was another one that was even harder to try and remember. Yeah, Keel did a lot of different writing over the years about different subjects. And again, I think that's kind of what you do. You're a newspaper guy, and you write what sells. You write what you can to pay the bills, right?
You have to make a living. You see, it's funny that when we get to someone like Kevin Randall, former military guy, writes sci-fi.
Yep.
But because of that, some people put down his UFO books. So he's writing sci-fi. How can he get away with that? Well, Kehoe was writing fiction long before he wrote factual articles and books about UFOs and had NICAP. He was writing fiction. I didn't see the same kind of attack. But I wanted to dovetail here from John Keel to the legends of the Men in Black.
Yes. Yeah, the Men in Black, again, like you mentioned earlier, Gray Barker really, I think, is the guy who probably introduces this. Again, unfortunately, the current generation may never have heard of the book, but they knew too much about flying saucers. This was a book that was, again, the sensational title, the sensational imagery. It really kind of presented this captivating story of not just Albert Bender, but again, it kind of presents this meme of the Men in Black, these mysterious strangers, people who intimidate UFO witnesses. There's a little controversy there because, of course, as you know, Gray Barker was a rather complex character. Many have actually pointed out the fact that Barker seemed less inclined toward believing a lot of the stories that he wrote and downright fabricated certain things because he knew that these stories would sell. At times, Barker also kind of played an agent provocateur in the sense that he liked to send bogus letters and things to other researchers. For instance, John Keel. Yeah, in John Keel's files, he had a lot of weird notes, weird letters that he had received. In fact, he had a whole file on anomalous mail, and there was going to be an entry about that in the never-published encyclopedia he was working on. But anomalous letters that he would receive included letters that had this ominous-looking letterhead that would say something like, "The International Bankers," and it would have this equally ominous note. And Keel had actually conducted a fair amount of analysis of the letters, the content, the writing style, and noted a number of tropes of these sorts of letters, which included everything from what appeared to be intentional misspellings, redundancies, things like that, you know, the appearance of numbers like the number 3 or the number 6, things along those lines. He also suspected strongly that Gray Barker had been one of those people who was sending these anomalous letters to either confuse or intimidate or to try and in some other way disrupt the investigative community and the other writers that were involved in the UFO scene at that time. So this is kind of where the origins of the Men in Black story begin, is with this guy who in many ways we might say operated a lot like an MIB or even a counterintelligence agent himself, but seemed to do so more for his own entertainment, if anything. And you know, and that wasn't really something that only Barker did. The late Jim Moseley also was known for having a rather peculiar sense of humor and at times kind of stirring the pot a little as well.
But, oh, yes. Well, Jim was on the Paracast's first episode and was on many times then, till actually just a few months before his death. And, yeah, he was a pot stirrer way back. He and Gray Barker became close friends, and they worked together, first pretending to be engaged in some kind of feud, which, of course, was a big joke. and then doing some stuff behind the scenes in terms of hoaxes. There's a book called Shockingly Close to the Truth from the early 2000s where Jim confesses about some of the deeds he did.
Yeah. And it's funny, in hindsight, to go back and to look at some of the writing from that period, including some Akeel's, where it's strongly implied that some of the things that are being written about actually could be chalked up to the kind of pranksters that Mosley and Barker were behind the scenes. But, you know, again, if we look back, though, in a historical review of Akeel's files, he also wrote about that. And he strongly suspected that Barker was involved in these sort of things, so he wasn't completely blind to that. He wasn't ignorant of that fact. But what Akeel also did was he went on to write more, I think, seriously about what he thought to be credible reports involving these so-called men in black. It's kind of funny that the way that Akeel writes about them, they aren't these mysterious people. They aren't always dressed in black. They weren't the kind of men in black of Gray Barker. If we remember from the Mothman prophecies, there's one famous instance involving a guy called Tiny. He's a very large guy. He's particularly sweaty and kind of strange. He has a penchant for drinking. And I'm not talking about Kool-Aid kids. He wears like a Russian fur hat. He's just a really peculiar character. And Akeel includes a section in Mothman Prophecies talking about a family, I believe, that had been visited by this character, Tiny. It later turns up in some of Keel's correspondence with British researchers that they had received a visit from him too and knew this character actually by name, although the name's redacted. I think Doug Skinner removes it from the correspondences to protect his identity. But this individual seems to have been known, and they say this really sounds like the guy you call Tiny in your book. So Skinner kind of makes the argument that actually some of the weird characters that Akeel wrote about and called Men in Black very well likely may have just been disturbed ufologists. Ufologists who might have been suffering from any number of conditions or might have just had a little social anxiety going on.
Let us go on with more of these and then back with Micah Hanks. More to come with Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items, and entails t-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of t-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great t-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
You've seen crazy diets to lose weight? At GCN Team, our healthy body weight loss system simply neutrifies the body, bringing down cravings. It has been proven that nutritional deficiencies drive appetite for carbs, sugars, and fats. Lose weight the easy way. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Fighting cravings is a fool's game. Give the body what it needs to be satisfied. Again, 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
I'm here with Scott Jusseum, founder of OMG Tax. Tell us how your company helps our listeners out there who have a problem with the IRS.
My team of lawyers, enrolled agents, and licensed tax experts remove wage garnishments sometimes in the same day. We even have reduced the total debt some of our clients were required to pay through what is known as an offer in compromise.
Can you give us an example of somebody you help?
Oh, can I ever? We have taken a $500,000 liability with the IRS guess what? The client didn't pay a dime through the representation known as non-collectible status with the government.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000 and you want to see if it's possible to pay a lot less, call OMG Tax right now for a free tax-saving consultation.
Call 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. That's 800-486-8112.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe Hand Sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American-made with American ingredients employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus. That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout. Right now, click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1 liter bottle of high-quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus, a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours, free, 2020safe.net.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So Micah Hanks of the Grailian Report rejoins us after an absence of a number of years where he was buried underground in a secret base going to other planets with a Stargate.
That's true.
Yeah. Right.
I was going to say, I don't know who briefed you, Gene, but yeah, I was actually, what happened was I was being held captive by the Darrows. That's true. That's right, the old Shaver mystery. But I managed to escape with the help of the friendly Taros and made my way above ground yet again. And now that I'm above ground, you know, there have been a lot of updates. The Grailian Report, of course, the long-running website is still there. My podcast, although, has departed and taken a slightly different approach with a new name. It's now the Micah Hanks Program. It focuses mostly on ufology, but about every fourth or fifth episode, I try to mix things up a little. But, you know, with the current kind of climate as it relates to all the developments happening, the Pentagon releasing videos, all this stuff, I have gone more in that direction with my research. And there'll be some, you know, some other things to come in the next few years. And unfortunately, that may cause me to have to go back underground for a while, but I'll be sure not to make it quite as long a departure as this last one has been. So it's good to be back with you guys.
I have to ask you how it feels to go into that Stargate, though. Compassed by that watery mist, and suddenly you find yourself in another galaxy.
Well, just imagine swimming through peanut butter. Very, very warm peanut butter. It's a lot like that. Not really a pleasant feeling.
Organic peanut butter or the stuff with all the extra additives?
The really chunky kind, Gene.
Oh. Yes, let's ride peanut butter. Is that what really happened to James Spader in the original movie Stargate?
I don't know.
You see him enter
sure.
the Stargate for the first time, and on the other side he becomes, no, we don't want to hear about that. When we get to the Men in Black, we think, are they or were they really agents or people vying to cover up UFOs, or mix in with them a bunch of cranks or what, or maybe even strange entities?
You know, it may have been a little of all of the above. Another of those accounts that Kiel shares in the Mothman Prophecies involves this kid, really, who shows up and is asking questions at the office of Mary Heyer. Yet again, not a man in black per se. This individual, if memory serves, was wearing a blue shirt, I think a t-shirt at that, and famously grabs an ink pen off of Mrs. Heyer's desk and looks at it as though he's never beheld the wonder that is an ink pen and just acts really strange and kind of out of this world. And I think yet again that although Kiel maybe never explicitly says Men in Black are the ultra-terrestrials, they are from Earth, they're like us, but somehow different, you know, it's strongly implied that he equates the Men in Black to being more akin to the actual, what would you call them, Saucerians, than being government agents who are on the trail of people who have seen flying saucers. Again, this is kind of where Kiel's Men in Black diverge a little from the traditional narrative, although there was a little of that with Gray Barker's early writings on it too. But I think in more recent years, more people are inclined to look at the Men in Black as probably being agents of some division of the U.S. government who are out there trying to silence UFO witnesses. And, you know, maybe that aspect of this mythos was more kind of popularized with the popularity of the Roswell incident and researchers who were following that, including the late Stanton Friedman and a number of others. So, you know, in those stories, you know, where you've got, you know, people who have been visited by, again, supposedly Air Force employees and told, you know, to be quiet or not to talk about this or that. I believe it was Glenn Davis, right, the mortician there at the local funeral home. And he had said that at one point one of these Air Force officials, quite obviously people there on the actual local airbase, so, I mean, these weren't guys in black suits that visit him, but nonetheless, what he took to be government employees who had told him, you know, it would take him along. What was it that he was told? He was threatened and said, you know, the buzzards will pick your bones or something along those lines. It'll take him a long time to find you if we put you out there in the desert or whatever. So now some of the aspects of his story, though, also over the years have kind of fallen apart. That has been pointed out by Kevin Randall and a number of others. And unfortunately, this has also kind of cast some doubt on some of the key witnesses to the Roswell thing. But nonetheless, my point is, I think that some of the interest in that case and the, you know, the attention that those narratives about harassment or intimidation, the way that that was portrayed, again, popular TV shows like Unsolved Mysteries definitely kind of played that up and seemed to bring more attention to this angle that there's a government component where government employees are showing up and questioning people. Now, it's not to say that that wasn't something that turned up in Kiel's writing, too. Yet again, in the second chapter of the Mothman Prophecies, it's very important to point out that there is a situation where a woman is visited by a man who claimed to be an Air Force agent, and he even gave her his name. He said, "My name is Richard French." Now, Kiel explicitly says in that chapter that Richard French was an imposter like so many others who have been going around the United States and talking to UFO witnesses. Yet again, he wore a gray suit, and it was civilian clothing, even though he had identified himself as being a Air Force, probably would have been a major, I guess, at the time. But what's interesting is that a Lieutenant Colonel Richard French does turn up many decades later. He, in fact, actually appeared at the citizens' hearing on UFO disclosure back in 2013. And French now claims that he worked for the Office of Special Investigations. He was an Air Force employee between 1952 and about 1975, I believe. And French said that he actually worked as a debunker and worked with the Blue Book program during the Blue Book years. And so during the time period that he would have appeared in Kiel's book, The Mothman Prophecies, we now know that a guy named Richard French certainly did work for the U.S. Air Force, and he very well could have been actually involved in Blue Book in some capacity. But the problem is that there are a lot of holes in the stories that he sold. Yet again, Kevin Randall has done a fantastic job pointing out some of the inconsistencies and the downright falsehoods that must exist in some of the stories that Richard French has told. Whether or not we believe every story he tells now, we can certainly say that one of the MIBs that Kiel called an imposter was actually an Air Force agent. Why he was asking people questions about UFOs, we may not know. But again, if he said he worked for Project Blue Book, that might explain it.
Well, we have to also think of other characters, such as Richard Doty.
Yeah.
The infamous Richard Doty. By the way, if you look at the Paracast archives on our site, theparacast.com, we have an interview with Richard Doty. All I can say is, set your belief systems aside. Suspend your disbelief before you listen to this guy.
Well, that was actually a really good interview. While we're on the topic of the MIB here, I'd just like to jump in with a couple of ideas here. Now, okay, we know that Blue Book did have a liaison with the FBI, and the FBI were known to have the dark suits, and they did go around and check on people's backgrounds and stuff for the Air Force as part of their normal investigations. Okay, so maybe that's where it started. We also kind of know that the phenomena tends to mirror the worldview of the experiencer in a way. Now, in this case, it seems to be almost mirroring the cultural worldview of the phenomena, where instead of just, it's just an individual who has a particular belief system who sees something and goes, okay, well, I'm seeing that because it fits this particular belief system. Like Micah, you mentioned earlier that people look at it in some cases from the point of view of demons or religious or some other way than technological, as in some aliens from another star system traveling here. But with the MIB, it gets weirder than that. I had an MIB experience where this black Cadillac came down from out of the side of a mountain, I don't know how, and went right across the road in front of me and then kept on going down the side of the mountain. And there was no road there. So I mean, how do we explain that? And there's other weird ones, too, where these Cadillacs have been seen being almost beamed up into a ship. So we've got this really bizarre aspect of the MIB that doesn't fit any terrestrial explanation.
Yeah, there's that aspect to it, Randall. Berthold Schwartz wrote a very interesting book on UFOs a number of years ago, and it was titled UFO Dynamics. But he's kind of looking at the, again, I think the term that he uses is the psychical aspects of the UFO phenomenon, but being, again, a practicing psychiatrist himself, I took that to mean that he was looking at the clinical kind of psychological side of it, but then also certain aspects that are more akin to psychic research and the occult. There's certainly a lot of that sort of thing in the book, and it makes for a very interesting analysis. Now, in the book, he recounts a story about a man who was visited by an alleged MIB, for lack of a better term. And this was one of those stories that's just, again, beyond bizarre.
We have something else beyond bizarre right here and right now. And by the way, Micah Hanks, not being bizarre, will be also hanging out with us for After the Paracast for you subscribers to the Paracast Plus. More to come with Micah, Gene, and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Classic science fiction at its best. Available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Tehebo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea helps build the red corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A.com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.